reclaiming who you really are and helping you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. Broadcasting to the world, you are listening to Michael Lilborn Williams and the Gospel Revolution.
Gospel Revolution Powercast for Friday, February 2, 2019. Broadcasting from the home of redemptionism, where we help you reclaim who you really are and help you remember what you didn't know you'd forgotten. We're coming to you from the heart of Gospel City, USA, where we say that a text without a context is a pretext for a subtext. But right now, with more persistent, consistent, repetitive CPR of the gospel, is the president and founder of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams.
Good morning, evening, afternoon, Don. How are you today?
I am sparkling like a diamond today, mate. I am. I just wrote something an hour or so ago and put it up in a couple of websites that I'm associated with. And I said, I am so satisfied, so satiated with Christ.
Yeah.
I just feel so damn satisfied.
It is quite amazing. I of course, have the opportunity to hear, living here in East Tennessee especially, I have the opportunity to hear all of the Christianese and all of the baggage that comes with those little statements, it was meant to be.
Can you go to any shop or store in where you are and people don't say, you have a blessed day now?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I've learned to just simply accept that that's coming from their heart and I'm not analyzing the doctrine behind it. And because, boy, when you're in it in a saturated way like this, if you pay too much attention to it, it can have negative consequences on you. But I'm just so grateful, like you, Don, to be – the thing I've decided to allow it to do is remind me of how free I am. Mm. And my goodness – I was thinking about the issue of making decisions, which is what my show this past Tuesday, as of this broadcast, was about. And I was thinking about, just how much power there is in a decision and what really qualifies and quantifies a decision on your part. If you do what you're told, that's not a decision.
Nope.
There is power in decisions.
Now, you're talking about a decision which is, as far as we could call it, a free will decision or a decision which is a free choice rather than one that's made under compunction.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And most people don't really know the difference, and many people have never made that type of decision. When you're ruled by guilt or shame or all of the negative baggage that comes along with Christianity, you're really never going to know what it's like to make a decision based on logic and reason and personal desire, what you really want. We defer to, we're trying to figure out what the Lord's will is and all of these things. And I was thinking about how free I was from, in this daily life, I am freed from God's decisions.
That's some.
I know that sounds kind of shocking. Now, the one thing that we are all very empowered with is God's decision that took place 2,000 years ago. But that decision means God didn't have to make any more decisions. And now that transferred the decision-making process over to us. But, I don't have to wake up and say, God, you told me to do this, so why is this going wrong? And what are you trying to teach me, Lord? And and getting really ticked off at God or my, and just think of it, Don, if you don't take responsibility for your own decisions, you are on an emotional roller coaster with no real grace to back you up because you've deferred your responsibility.
Well, I still reserve the right to get ticked off at God. His decisions were all great. I mean, just think of cockroaches. I don't think you said that. I'm going to read through what I wrote, if I can do it with my teeth in here. I am so satisfied, so satiated with Christ. Since I left the struggle to understand behind, since I realized that when the church told me that my struggle was with sin, but then I discovered that my struggle was with the church.
Yeah.
Since I realized that all the eschatology that the church said was in the future was all completed 2 millennia ago. Since I stopped blaming Satan and took full responsibility for my own actions. Since I realized that God and I are one and I cannot tell where he stops and I start or where I stop and he starts. Since I accepted at my core that I am the righteousness of God in Christ and that I was born holy, righteous, and perfect, and that I have the mind of Christ. Since I accepted that I am God in the earth and that if it is to be, it's up to me to leave this creation better than I entered it. I am so satisfied with Christ, so satiated with his love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is a powerful place of peace and
Man, the best thing is there's no anxiety pressing in. There's no...
Isn't that the truth?
I don't even know how to explain it.
And you don't even know why the anxiety is not pressing in. You don't know why the internal eruption isn't happening.
Well, you don't understand that it's actually not pressing in until 2020 hindsight kicks in, and maybe 6 months down the road you say, hey, hang on.
Yeah, you don't even know that it's happened. That is the one of the greatest ironies of the power of the gospel, as Jackie Bernard shared with us, the stealthy nature of the gospel. It is very true, and that's why we encourage people in the CPR of the gospel, because you are learning a new way of thinking, not what to think, but you are learning how to think in a whole different way. And you don't even know you're learning it while you're learning it.
There is a thing that scientists call neural pathways. And these are pathways through the brain where if I have an experience and I've built up some experience in this situation, my mind will automatically go down a pre-designed neural pathway that was developed the last time I had this experience. But if I want to think differently, it is absolutely possible, and in fact quite necessary, to develop new neural pathways. And this is possible. Most people are not aware of it because what we do is we say, well, what I've always believed is right.
Mm-hmm.
But what if it isn't right? What if you just believed everything that you were taught and decided to accept it at face value and never research it for yourself?
I think everyone would agree with that changing our minds and finding new and better ways to think instead of sticking with the same thing of the diagnosis of mental illness is doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. So what keeps it, if we've got the ability to do that, what keeps us from doing it and what can promote the almost natural transition to thinking in a different way? And let me tell you a couple of things that will not ever allow you to change your mind. Guilt, judgment, they will not allow you to change your mind. The need to be right.
Is that why we push the CPR of the gospel, the consistent, persistent, repetitive nature of just absorbing it?
And don't believe we push it enough. It is so important. The failure to take responsibility for our own actions. And, it's so bizarre. It's like Paul saying you know, the things he's gotten accused of and how just the opposite it really is. And that's what the gospel revolution gets accused of, is this not taking responsibility. And it's Christianity that doesn't take responsibility. They defer it off onto confession of sins and God's will and a hundred other crazy doctrines that have just been manufactured outside of the parameters of the gospel. With those things in place in your life, you're never going to be able to develop new neural pathways to think differently, because the brain needs some security. If you're saying, oh no, you're not going to be secure if you do that. No, if you're wrong, oh no, what are they going to think? And oh no, and you can't change your mind, and oh no. But when the gospel comes in and says, no, there's no such thing as judgment, you know, just let go of that. In fact, you don't even have to let go of it. I will let go of it for you. Guilt. Yeah, no need in that. You don't even have to try to get rid of your guilt. Just absorb the gospel and I'll get rid of the guilt for you. You'll wake up one day wondering why you ever felt guilty before in your life. Therefore, then and only then are new pathways subject to being opened and old ones being closed. And the amazing thing that it is, it really happens on its own. Now, I've tried the old formula that it takes such and such amount of time for something to develop a new habit and a new way of thinking. I've tried all that. And everything I did in trying that failed. I've never developed a new way of thinking by effort. But I wake up all the time thinking differently just because of the gospel. And I've gone the 10 days, the 40 days, whatever they've said, you know, that you've got to think deliberately, think differently before you think differently. And I think it's much deeper than that. I don't think it's just an external thing.
Did you pray and fast, though?
I even did that, yes.
For 40 days?
No, I've never
fasted. Well, see, there you go, friend.
So, yeah, it's a good point. You can either go that direction and try that, or just try the gospel.
It never worked for me, I can tell you that. In fact, I could never fast. I became a great liar when I fasted because I haven't eaten for about 6 hours. I haven't eaten. I don't know. I was exposed to the gospel some 17 years ago. God, where'd all the time go? And it was like somebody said, oh, you're an overnight success. And he said, yes, an overnight success. It took 20 years. And I think I have become heretic that took 17 years because, and I didn't set out to do that. I mean, the step-by-step realization of personal worthwhile goals and the gospel just happened. I didn't have to, and I suppose if I did anything to get that, I just listened to the gospel.
That's true.
Time after time after time. And, of course, doing this podcast with you, I get the gospel every week anyway.
No, and, you know, that was the thing that I came to realize a long time ago, was how fortunate you and I are in that we are able to it's really weird because by choosing to do this, we have placed ourselves in a consistent, persistent, repetitive examination of the gospel.
Call yourself fortunate. I mean, if I had some other partner to do this with, I'd probably be fortunate too. And I can understand why you feel you're fortunate doing this with me. I mean, you're only human, mate.
I am only that, yes.
Gospel revolution.
Hey, what are we doing today, mate?
Well, I think we're going to try out Hebrews chapter 4. And I think what we're going to learn today, Don, is what today is.
Okay.
Paul's made such a, the writer of Hebrews has made such a big to-do about this. You know, just to drop a little thing in this, I got a call from Vic DeBrennan the other day about this book of Hebrews and its authorship. We've, you know, we're looking all the time to see what the possibilities are. Now, let I'll explain why Vic was excited, and I could go along with the excitement and definitely the possibilities. And he said he'd been reading some research that there was the thought that Apollos had written the book of Hebrews because of some of the differences. It's got some Pauline comparatives in it, but I think you've pointed out that it is a higher form of Greek than what Paul used. So there are some differences that would say who. Now, just exactly who wrote this. I think the thing where we've been kind of brain-chained is that we felt that the only persons other than he who could have written would have been the apostles, the other disciples. And we know it couldn't have been them. Not even possible. There's not even a same planet. But when Vic brought this up to me, he was excited about it because he thought, you know, well, if this wasn't Paul, that means somebody else understood the gospel other than Paul. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, you know, that's a very positive way to look at this. And it opened my mind to really examine this. I was always you know, I've heard Paul so castigated on so many levels that he, you know, he hated women. He was against this. He was against that only to, and as I started pointing out years ago, you know, it's really difficult to say that Paul was against women when he was the one that said there is no such thing in Christ as male or female. And nobody that I know of had ever said that in the generations before him. He really set a new standard of thought about that. So I've been defensive of Paul. I admit that because I know that his – I did come to the resolution that Paul's teachings were so amazing, and I couldn't find anybody else. But – I do like the thought that maybe somebody else has written a letter here that is the gospel that wasn't Paul.
Well, see, we don't, there are so many things we don't know. Firstly, Hebrews should never have made it into the canon, if you want to call it that, the formalized Bible that was set in hip deep in blood in the late 300s by the efforts of Constantine and Pope Damasus and his little cohorts. On the basis that modern Christianity says letters are canonical, it should never be there. We don't even know who wrote it. It could be like some of the Pauline epistles. It could be fraudulently written by disciples of Paul. But I keep remembering that we are talking about Pauline logic. I mean, the logic that this epistle shows is so Pauline that if it wasn't written by Pauline, dear little,
that's Paul.
Yes,
wife.
Yes. She's he was an apostle and she was an epistle. If it wasn't written by Paul, then it was written by somebody who knew him pretty darn well and had learned at his feet. Now, that could have been Apollos. It could have been Barnabas. We just don't know except for one thing, and that is that that this was written with a much more polished style of Greek than Paul generally used. Mm-hmm. But the logic, you can't escape the logic in this book.
It's just so profound, and so for the first time, to say all of this, I am open to the possibility that Paul did not write the book of Hebrews. with the excitement that Vic transferred to me, that the reason that that is really possibly kind of wonderful is that we don't have just one man on planet who understood the gospel for at the time, that we had others also.
That's a good observation. I mean, you know, yeah, Barnabas really went around with Paul. Luke went around with Paul, traveled with his traveling companion. They had to know what he thought of the gospel. They had to know. Now Barnabas, in fact, was a Jew from Crete, but he spent enough time under James's thumb, to separate himself, or for Paul and him to separate amidst not so happy circumstances. Same with Mark. Mark must have known the gospel. He traveled with Paul. So a lot of these people must have known the gospel, and certainly this writer did.
There is no doubt about that. And, the mindset that the gospel creates is an openness to change your mind. And like I said, I've been fairly adamant before. I just would not even entertain. I said Paul wrote this letter, until I began to realize that I can say that until, you know, the cows come home. I'm in Tennessee, and we have to wait until the cows come home.
And you do have mighty fine-looking cows there, too. I can understand you waiting.
So the... But, you know, it was finally, and I think you're probably one of the major forces that showed me that there's just no place like even the other letters that are attributed to Paul and in their entirety where we can find where Paul's logic stops and somebody else's kicks in the last chapter, the last three chapters, whatever. We really are trying to stay open about this. So here is the book of Hebrews, and I have to tell you, it's been my Hebrews and Romans have been my sacred books of Paul's. So for me to be willing to consider this was not Paul as really a big change around. I have got to at this point, because I will forget it. My favorite verse in the Bible is Romans 11:32. I said 10:32. I've had so many people saying, wait, where? What? Oh, there's a chapter missing.
That's okay. They all know you're getting old, mate.
So I do know it's 11:32, but and I defer to my many excuses that I have now for a lot of things that I didn't have before.
Hey, listen, before we start on Hebrews 4, I want you to have a look at this. You see this, what I'm holding up?
Tim Tam. I've never heard of such a thing before in my life.
Well, they're called the Tim Tams, and they are the best-selling biscuit, we call them. You'd call them a cookie. And if you haven't had a Tim Tam, you really are going to die unfulfilled. I'm just telling you that, mate. You need to run down to your public store, and if they don't have them, demand they get them in. And you go to the international section. There's an international section where they sell English custard and powder and all kinds of that, and Vegemite, but we won't go there. And Tim Tams. Now you gotta try these Tim Tams. And so this is my homesick shout out to every single gospel revolutionary. Go and get some Tim Tams from Publix. You'll only have to buy one pack. And then, listen, all I can say is you'll never stop eating these little suckers. That's all I can say. They are a chocolate wafered cookie, and that's all I'm going to say. But it's hard to know whether they're actually a cookie or a candy.
Or manna.
From heaven.
Yeah.
Gospel Revolution.
Well, Mr. Bartlett, I think we are ready to start at chapter 4. We've had a fun time chatting. I hope people have enjoyed the exchange. I think there was a lot to learn out of what we there just is. Said.
Australia makes better cookies in America.
And but do not try the Vegemite. Come on, let's get real.
I got this fresh bread roll yesterday from Publix, and it was just cooked that morning, and I slathered it with about an eighth of an inch of butter all over it, and then because butter is your friend, according to Pauline Dean, and then I put the scraping of Vegemite and. Laura was on the phone to a friend, and she nearly threw up. I thought, now I know how to get my wife's attention.
I would suggest you find other ways to get your wife's attention.
I'm going to play that Vegemite sandwich thing there. Okay, so here is another chapter that opens up with a therefore.
Let us therefore. So now he's saying that all of us need a therefore, not just you, and not just the subject, but now he is making sure that he has corralled everybody together and said, now let us therefore.
So let us therefore fear. Let me just see if that word's phobos. Lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest, any of you should seem to come short of it. So obviously he's about to talk about some way that we can lose our rest or come short of his rest, I guess.
And let's look at see what the therefore is there for. That is the term today. Now, and the today is connected to belief, right? Today, if you harden not your heart, today, if you will hear his voice, because they didn't believe, because they did, they could not, them that believed not, they couldn't enter into his rest because they believed not today. And verse 13, but exhort one another daily while it is called today.
And all of that was juxtaposed over against losing confidence, losing our joy, losing our confidence in the apostle and high priest of our calling.
And he's given the warning, actually, in verse 12 of chapter 3, take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. So he has taken this issue of belief.
And that word, an evil heart, was poneros. It means a sick heart.
Yeah.
A heart that's diseased.
Sicko.
You sicko.
Yeah. So now, and we want to maintain this. Now, this would be akin, because Paul did walk these two subjects together, or the writer of Hebrews, who would have been a student of Paul's, at least. These writers have given us this clear juxtaposition of keeping the law and belief. Keeping the law and belief, belief and keeping the law. What is similar between the law and belief? Neither one of them can be done. Neither one of them work. And neither one of them are achievable, which we find out in John. Remember John chapter 12, none believed. God concluded them all in unbelief that he might have mercy upon all. So let's not forget the whole dang thing and try to wade through Hebrews. Let's draw in the reinforcements of what we know has been taught about belief, about the fact that nobody did believe, about the fact that God had mercy. God has mercy on unbelief.
The fact
that nobody could believe, and proven and concluded. Even Jesus himself said that if you don't believe in him, it has no consequences.
Mm-hmm.
We forget that's in the Bible.
You know, I keep remembering that verse in John chapter 3, for God so loved the world. And what that has been taught to us is that you got to believe in Jesus. And if you believe in Jesus, then you become a Christian. But they all forget verse 19, which says, and this is a condemnation. You ask any average person, what is a condemnation? If you believe not, you're condemned already. John chapter 3, verse, I don't know, 17 or so. What is it?
Yeah.
And they'll say, hell, it's hell. You're going to go to hell, don't you know? No. In verse 19, mm-hmm. Jesus, looking down the avenues of time, knowing that that's going to happen, says, and this is a condemnation. I mean, what a joke on most Christianity. What a joke on most Christians.
Yeah.
This is a condemnation. You couldn't find your backside with both hands and a flashlight. You live in darkness. That is the condemnation, not hell. I'm sorry, mate. You make me think of all this stuff, and I just have to blather on, mate.
It's like spinning a top. I've just got to wait until you run out.
Oh, how many times? Oh, that is. Oh, you're cruel. You're cruel. Now I'm wondering how many times you've done that to me.
So this issue, we've got to hold this firm in our brains. It's called reading in context. So the context of this is that today has not happened yet. If today would have happened for the nation of Israel, it would have worked. But today hadn't happened yet in the progression of this story. One of the things that Hebrews in particular, even above that of Romans, at least as consistent as Romans, you have to stay with the progression of the story. Remember how we had to stick with the progression of the story in chapter 2, for we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels. Now, and see, we had to hold that in its time and space reference as to the point of the story that was being told. Otherwise, you drag that out somewhere. Oh, it's yet to come, yet to be. Yeah, we see not yet all things put under him. Oh, and, you know, he's waiting at the right hand of the throne of God, waiting till his enemies be made his footstool. Oh, and all the enemies of Christ are going to be defeated. Oh, so let's get an army together and go kill everybody that doesn't believe. Folks, what we're talking to you today is about the peace of this whole dang planet and the things that have kept it from being at peace for 2,000 years. We can affirm to you historically that the vast majority of wars on this planet, whether it's what religion has been through, it's all been about the fact they missed today.
What do we think the Crusades were all about? What do we think that the Roman Inquisition was all about, the Spanish Inquisition was all about? What do we think that Protestants burning Anabaptists, other Protestants, because they didn't believe in adult child baptism? What do we think that was all about? What do we think that John Calvin burning his opponents at the stake using green wood so that they'd burn slower? What the hell do we think that was all about? It was all about belief. And you don't believe like me. I don't believe like you. I am better than you. My self-righteousness is cleaner than you. My smells better than your Oh, my gosh.
It goes on and on and on. Now, if you will listen to Christian apologists, they will say, oh, yes, you're trying to compare this with Islam. But you see, this all only happened under one pope for one brief period of time. No, wrong, liar, it didn't. As Don has pointed out to you, all the way up through Calvin and many others, and even to this day, people are assaulted for these reasons. Goodness, just in England, just a few very countable years ago, there was a Christian assassin who went out onto an island knowing that none of the kids and the people there had room to escape. He determined they were all heathen. I realize he was mentally ill, but it's amazing that we give detraction for those who have Christian labels and do things in the name of Christ. And then we forget those. But boy, if it's got the name of any other religion on it, boy, it's the religion, not the mental illness. But if it's a Christian, oh, he's mentally ill. It wasn't the Christianity. We know Christianity would never do that to somebody's mind. But what we know by history is Christianity will do that to somebody's mind especially if they're mentally ill. The guy goes out on an island, carries an arsenal, was even helped by the people he was assassin to, saying that he was coming out there to teach them, you know, marksmanship, you know, loaded up with bags full of guns and ammunition, and went out there and opened fire on them and killed so many of them. It was ridiculous. But you see, we want to think, Christianity wants you to think that the time frame in which Christians killed people for not believing was under one pope for about 30 years. It's a lie. It has been happening ever since, ever since this whole illusion started that you have to believe.
Let us therefore fear lest a promise being left us of entering into his rest. Let me just go to another version here. The Mirror Bible says, what a foolish thing it would be for us if we should now fail in a similar fashion to enter into the full consequences of our redemption. Just reading verse 2. The gospel we have heard today is the same gospel that was preached in the promise. Both share the same source, intent, and content, although the first was a mere shadow of the second. God had mankind in mind all along, yet because people lacked the persuasion by which the word would be ignited and brought to life in them, the promise did not profit them at all. Wow.
And, the thing that would bring today to fruition had not arrived, but there was a today that was going to bypass all of these issues of your heart being hardened, the unbelief and departing from the living God. So he is given a comparison here. He says, now, what's the difference between them and us? The gospel was preached to them as well as to us. So if theirs was unbelief, what's going to stop us from being in unbelief? We could go back and do the comparison again. So if the problem with Israel was disobedience, what in the world is going to keep us from being in the very same a declaration of absolute disobedience? So the comparison here is to place the Jews under the first covenant into the very same category as those who, which is the whole world, those who are under the second covenant, and in the second covenant, I would prefer to say. And if unbelief stopped them, you stand just in the very same way. See, by the time we get to Hebrews chapter 11, Paul's challenging the Gentiles' belief that God cut off the nation of Israel. This is a similar line of thinking brought out later that's brought out here, and I want to touch on this just a moment. Because all of Christianity teaches, well, see, you got to believe. Well, see, you got to believe. Just the same as they teach in Hebrews chapter 11. Well, you see, Israel was cut off. Israel was cut off. The Gentiles were grafted in. And no, that's what Paul's showing. This is your flawed thinking. Your flawed thinking is that Israel was cut off and you were grafted in. Then Paul gives the treacherous irony of you believing that. If God spared not the original branch, who are you to have any confidence before God? Isn't that what this whole book is about, is getting rid of your confidence, that you lose your confidence when you think that it's based on your belief, when you think that God replaced you with Israel? You're going to have no confidence whatsoever. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is trying desperately to shoot this down, to bring us all into this one mindset.
Well, he says at the end of verse 2, he says, for unto us was the gospel preached as well as unto them.
Yep.
But the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed But the word preached did not profit them. Well, why didn't it profit them? He says, because it was not mixed with faith in them that heard it. Now, we remember back to Romans chapter 10, where it says, but didn't they all hear it? And they still couldn't believe. Sounds a lot like the same writer, doesn't it?
Well, it does indeed. And the writer here is suggesting that the only thing that kept them from receiving it was they didn't mix it with faith. Does that mean if they had mixed it with faith, that the cross would have been unnecessary? That is what he is implying here. Now, he is either saying, yes, they did not mix it with faith, and neither can you. That's why the promise of the faith of Christ has now delivered both Jew and Gentile into the same. As he says in Hebrews later on, that they without us could not be made perfect. What perfected them? Our faith? Did our faith perfect the Jewish nation? I think not.
Well, we know that they couldn't have had faith because of what Jesus says in John 12, that they were under a curse. They couldn't have believed if their lives depended on it.
Yep. And that stayed in place all the way through the cross. And as he constantly said, if you believe in me, John 3:16, and over, as we've pointed out many times, some 90 times in some form, the word belief shows up in the book of John, but nobody gets to chapter 12. I mean, it's like not reading the last chapter of the book, of Huckleberry Finn, you know. How do you know what happened to Indian Joe? How do you know what happened to Huck? You don't know if you don't read the last chapter. All right, so Don, let's read verse 3, and either he's leading us to a conclusion that today, in the point of the story, has not happened yet. Now, he's obviously said today didn't happen. Today didn't happen for the Israelites. So has today happened for the second covenant? If today hasn't happened for the second covenant, we are still despairing of trying to have faith the same way the Hebrews did. Let's see what they had and still wound up with no faith added to that. They not only heard the gospel, they watched the Red Sea part, and still they were in unbelief. They watched water come out of a rock, and still were in unbelief. We could go down through this list again. We covered it for you pretty well, but we certainly didn't exhaust it even last week. So let's compare those guys being required to believe, and they failed to add faith with what they heard and the experience, and now we are requiring people today to have the same add faith to the gospel type deal without any view of a Red Sea parting. Nobody's seen water come out of a rock and the list of other things.
Now, the closest that modern Christianity comes to that is a miracle. You know, somebody's leg grows out. Somebody's disease is miraculously disappeared. And you can understand those people believing. But that is so distant. I mean, wouldn't it be great if everyone's legs grew out or if everyone was healed? Wouldn't that be so good? It wouldn't be hard to believe then.
Well, and also, you know, Don, I remember the leg growing out thing, and it's a psychological trick. You said you hold a person's
legs. Did you ever do that?
One in one hand and one in the other. Oh, I did it, but I watched it. I knew it was hokey.
Well,
did it. It worked. It's like, this is just really weird. Because the weird thing was that after the person got their leg to grow out, the person that got their leg to grow out wasn't limping.
Well, actually, what I was talking about was somebody who came back from Afghanistan, leg blown off with an IED, and suddenly their leg grows out. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, now that.
And there's been.
Haven't heard of one yet.
We haven't seen that. And the people who. And even the people who claim to have been healed there's not any of them that's it's a visual healing.
Never. Okay, the CLV has translated this as, then we who believe, I want you to just remember that phrase, we who believe. Then we who believe are entering into the stopping, according as he has declared, as I swear in my indignation, if they shall be entering into my stopping, although the works occur from the disruption of the world. Now, that disruption of the world is foundation of the world. It's a down throwing of the world. It's kata, it means not just kataballo is a word that means, ballo is a word that means to throw, and ballo is a word from which we get ballistic and we get ball, and then the prefix is added to it, kataballo, which means the down throwing or the downcasting. It's a very Greek way of saying when the world was created. Now, oh my God. Again, if I transliterate this, this is, we are into coming for into the down down ceasing, the ones believing. Now, nowhere does it say we who are believers, but it says the ones believing. So, we're coming to the rest of the ones believing.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be for anyone else except a one or the plurality, ones believing. So, it could be either.
So now, when I look at this in Mr. Strong's Hebrews 4:3, the term for gar, which I know that, we which. So the we which is not in there. It's because one. Now, the Strong's says that this is translated in other places as the, this, that. So it's really very indicative so far of an individual. It is the would be an individual, this would be an individual, that would be an individual, one would be an individual, he would be an individual, she would be an individual, it would be an individual. They're all singular. Every single other place this term is used, it is singular.
Not those, but that or this.
And the term have believed is not there either. Because one believed.
We have to never lose sight of the fact that the Bible was translated into English via somebody else's pre-existing theology.
I love this.
With faith in them that heard, because or for, believer, to rest, enters into rest. Would be just as the we is not in there. Believers enter into rest. So let's look at this logically. Why did it not work for ancient Israel? Because the faith was not mixed in with, you know, they heard it, but not with faith.
Now let's look, Don, and I'm going to interrupt you.
No, I'm going to interrupt your interruption.
Go ahead.
It was not mixed with faith in them that heard it because only believers enter into rest. Okay, that's me.
Okay. And now, the all of this about Israel, it is a plurality in verse 2. And then it goes down to the singularity because it's evident by the context, them, all right, see, look at the difference. So we're talking about them in verse 2. That is translated them, they, those. Obviously all plurals.
Big difference, isn't it?
All right. When we get to verse 3, so we're comparing Israel, we're comparing the Old Testament to the new the old covenant to the new covenant, and under the old covenant was referring to them, and obviously chapter verse 2 it's referring to one, not them. It's no longer about them. It is still the same subject. Faith is absolutely must be applied.
So let me read that through. For unto us the gospel was preached as well as unto them, but the word preached did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in them that heard it, because...
Plural, 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 plural.
Because only a believer enters into rest.
Yes.
Boom, boom. Now, doesn't that make more logical sense than this translation by King Jimmy?
Yeah. Because one believed... and do enter because one believed go into, and that's into, what is that?
Ice means
just
into.
Means into.
It means heading towards and going into something.
All right. So one believes. So just one believes. And that's the entrance. The entrance is by one. The entrance is by one. We could say that all day long as the directive here at this point. The entrance is, they did not enter because they did not believe. Why? Because the entrance is by one. They can't. Because they could not believe. How many people do you need to believe for everybody to get in? Well, how many saviors do you need for everybody to be saved? How many crucifixions do you need for sin to be eradicated? Why we took this whole subject and reversed the equation completely after the fact is really quite amazing. This looks quite deliberate that this was imposed upon the human race.
But given the fact that these people were taught from childhood a certain kind of theology, it makes total sense that they would translate it that way.
Yes. And now here, this is very telling also. Now let's hold that thought and read the rest of this. As I have sworn in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. Now, here they are struggling to enter in, and what has God said? You ain't going to do it. Well, that's kind of cruel. They're all struggling to do it, but why was this happening? To prove that personal faith could not get the job done. I swore in my wrath, although...
Yeah, now this is a big although. This is such a big although.
Although the works were finished from the foundation of the world.
Boom, boom.
Oh, man. So, now, there is no line of logic except the one that we're taking you through and pointing out to you at this point. We're only reading this in context and making sure that the Greek words are clear in what they are presenting to us. The fact of it is that whoever was going to believe, it was finished before the foundation of the world. And what did Jesus say as he was dying on the cross? It is finished. Now, when did that happen? Before the foundation of the world.
The lamb slain from before the foundation of the world, according to, is it Revelation?
It's, you just can't take this stuff out. We've ignored it because of lack of understanding. But see, as long as you have the population of the world divided into the saved and the unsaved, the washed and the unwashed, the righteous and the unrighteous, you have to ignore these verses. You have to ignore the concept, the principle, that whatever salvation is, it was settled before God said, let there be light. How much sure? You see, now, if you, what is the only thing you could possibly lose here if you let these things slip? The only thing you can lose is your confidence. You can't lose your salvation.
More than that, you're going to lose the confidence in the who the believer was. You're going to lose your confidence in the apostle and chief priest of our calling.
Yes, and that is who this writer is calling us back to maintaining confidence in. So now this is a power-packed verse. It is absolutely pivotal, transitional from the thought presented in chapter 3. In fact, all of chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. And now we've gone through this major pivot from believing being about them to being about one.
It's not always about you.
Thank God.
Verse 4 of chapter 4 of Hebrews. For he spoke in a certain place of the seventh day in this manner, and God did rest the seventh day from all his works.
Mm.
Now think about that. Did he rest after Calvary? Oh, Calvary. Jeez. Did he rest after Calvary? No. Did he rest after, Moses gave the law? Nope. He rested on the seventh day after or from all his works. All of his works were done. On the seventh day, all he did on the seventh day was said, well, we better give him somewhere to live, huh? and give him roses to smell, even though, you got to watch the pricks. And that was it. On the seventh day, he rested from not some of his works.
Yeah, it's a good point, Don, because that includes the work that was demonstrated at the cross. That work he also rested from. Now, who enters into that rest? Obviously, Israel did not enter into that rest. Let us continue to see what that interest. Now, we just found out that only one gains entrance. Only one. That's what we've learned in verse 3. Only one gains interest. Only one gains entrance. Now, let me compare that just a moment to the book of James. The book of James says that after you've added faith, after you've added diligence, after you've added patience, after you've added prayer, after you've added tithing, I'm adding a little bit to his adding to, might as well, after you have got all your dirty thoughts cleaned up, after you've got caught up on your tithes and gifts and offerings, then an entrance shall be ministered unto you abundantly into the everlasting kingdom of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. Poppycock.
In the Mirror translation, where the writer says, Scripture records, I'm reading verse 4 here, Scripture records the seventh day to be the prophetic celebration of God's perfect work. What God saw satisfied his scrutiny. In Psalm 95, the same seventh day metaphor is reiterated. Oh, that they would enter my rest. Verse 6, it is clear then that there is still an opportunity to enter into that rest which Israel failed to access because of their unbelief. Even though they were the first to hear the good news of God's intention to restore mankind to the same Sabbath that Adam and Israel had lost.
Mm-hmm. Now, I think it'd be interesting, just as a follow-up to what we've done, is let's look at these terms, they. Now, also, we've got to emphasize that verse 6 saying, seeing therefore it remaineth. At what point does it remaineth? It remaineth right after Israel failed. That's when it remaineth. This remaineth doesn't apply to January or the first week in February 2019. This seeing therefore it remaineth that some must enter therein is from the point after Israel failed. This is how the writer of this book tells this chronological story, being very precise in his chronological examination of this.
Well, let me read verse 6 in the King James, because it actually is pretty clear in the King James. Seeing therefore it remaineth that someone must enter therein, and they to whom it was first preached entered not in because of unbelief. So he's saying that someone must enter in.
Okay, so tell me how we get there. Seeing therefore it remaineth that some...
That's just simply what the Greek says. Tis? Yeah.
Really?
Even our brother Strong's agrees. He says some or any person or object.
Oh my gosh. How consistent is this in the Greek? Now, the thing that is that we're finding here is this more refined Greek, the writer, whether it's Paul who got a better education or one of his contemporaries who knew a different form of Greek, we must really give close attention to the Greek. With Paul, you know, you can give great attention to context and probably extract what Paul has to say with a with not such a in-depth view of Greek. If this is true, that this is a more polished form of Greek, it behooves us then to acknowledge that and follow this Greek to its letter of intent. So far, do you see what has happened? That it has switched from they to one on more than two occasions now.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't enter, so one has to. If one enters in, then that's all that needs to go in. If they didn't, then it is obvious that one still must enter into the rest. Now, what rest? A rest that God entered into about this work before the foundation of the world.
Yeah, a rest from all
this
his
is
works.
So profound, Don. I don't know if we're leaving people in the wings or not, as somebody told me we were doing. But I'm telling you, you're just going to have to listen over and over, because this is so pertinent, so relevant. And here, let me tell you what's happening. You are getting the benefit of my propensity toward context. But because this is a more highly refined form of Greek.
Highly refined person.
Don's help in following this through in the Greek is absolutely paramount. And we usually go through this in a tantamount situation, is that the Greek and this, but in this study that we're doing right now, I already see it right now, while the context is still going to hold its place, paramount to that, because of this more refined Greek than was used by Paul in other letters, it's vitally important that we examine this very closely. So I hope you got that, folks. We've talked about them couldn't enter in because it still remained that one enter in and into what? The rest that took place before the foundation of the world. Now, I'm just getting way too excited here, so
okay.
Read.
Again, he limits a certain day. He sets boundaries around a certain day. Mm-hmm. Marks out a certain day, saying in David, today, after so long a time, as it is said, today, if we will hear his voice, harden your hearts. For if Jesus had given them rest, then would he not afterwards have spoken of another day? Now, let me just read that through in.
I love this.
Verse 7 in the Mirror translation. So now, again, many years later, he points specifically to an extended opportunity when he announces in David's prophecy, today, when hearing my voice, do not do so with a calloused heart. Be faith sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking to the them.
Yeah.
If Joshua, now, and that is the word that is being used here, Jesus, Joshua are the same word. If Joshua, who led the new generation of Israel out of the wilderness, where their parents perished through unbelief, had succeeded in leading them into the rest that God intended, David would not, so many years later, have referred to yet another day.
Wow. I think that getting that translation of that word from the current understanding of the word Jesus to the word Joshua, which Jesus and Joshua are the same thing. But with this, by reading this as Joshua, it just clarifies this so much more, because Joshua was the one who was doing this at the time. So the first Joshua did not give them rest. That Joshua did not give them rest.
Even though he was a shadow of some Joshua to come.
Yes. Oh, man, this is just... Oh. So at that point, from when Joshua failed, Joshua failed, Joshua failed to give them rest. The individual Joshua failed to give them rest. Therefore, this today that was spoken of then would never have been spoken about again by David many years later.
Many centuries later.
Yes. So centuries later. So we're talking about a today. A today that didn't happen under Joshua. A today that David was still looking for.
Verse 9. This can only mean that there is a rest that is still remaining to the people of God.
Yep. Remaining from what point? We've got to keep that context there. What has he just affirmed? Joshua didn't do it. David prophesied about it. From that point of prophecy, there remaineth a rest to the people of God. Christianity is so ignorant. I do not like using that term, but when it is so apropos, you just got to use it. They all read this, verse 9, in front of a church There's a day, therefore, that the rest of God, there's a rest, folks, I'm telling you, there's a rest that remains for the people. I know you're weary, my dear friend. I know it's been rough. I know you've had losses and trials and you've lost your money, your kids, your car, your dog. Sounds like a damn country music song to me, but there's a rest. Oh, I'm telling you, there's a rest to coming. And if you don't get it here, there's a day when that day is coming on that resurrection morning when all the dead in Christ shall rise. I'll have a new body. Praise the Lord. I'll have a new life. You are missing out on that new life now because you've been lied to by Christianity.
What a sad day when the future promise or a future hope. See, and that's all a future hope. And Paul says in Romans that creation, that man was created subject to two things, vanity and hope. And you got to have hope. I mean, if you don't have, if it hasn't happened, you need hope. Boy, you need all the hope you can get, and then some. You don't need hope when the reality has come. When the shadow is only all you've got, you need a hell of a lot of hope. But when the reality has come and the shadow is no more, you don't need hope. You just need to get down and enjoy life is what you need to do.
Well, I guess we're ready for verse 10.
That is entered into his rest. He also has ceased from his own works as God did from his. Now, let me read you that through in the mirror. God's rest celebrates his finished work. Whoever enters into God's rest immediately abandons his own efforts to complement what God has already perfected. Dang, that's good.
That's excellent.
And why wouldn't you? I mean, what, are you going to put out something better than God did?
Yeah, thank you for that, Don, because this is the essence of Christianity. Let's create something better than God did. Oh, God, you know, you did a good job, but leave it to us Christians. We're going to do it better.
Boy, you know what, Mike? I was just thinking that, mate, if Paul's gospel had won out over the perverts, as he says in Galatians 1, if his gospel had won out over, as he says, the other gospel.
Which is not a gospel at all.
Can you imagine you and I'd be out of a job?
And we would live in a world that looks pretty much nothing like this one.
Wow. It's hard. I mean, the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages would never have happened.
They would have never have happened.
Good
God. I had this thing happen back last year sometime, and I was sitting meditating on these things. And I was thinking about all of the new innovations and things that are happening, transportation, communication, medicine. And I was thinking about, you know, the philosophers. Remember, I did the study on the great thinkers of the world and how when I started searching for them, the last one was right before the cross. And then the next one showed up in the 1400s with Galileo, the very next great thinker. We tried to figure out what happened to why nobody could think. They did think. They just got killed.
Well,
thinking.
Well, look at Copernicus and Galileo. Galileo shared a dorm with the Pope when they were both back in college. But it didn't stop the Pope saying, hey, listen, the sun is not the center of the universe. The earth is. And if you say anything else, I'll bloody well kill you. I mean, geez. I mean, I wouldn't think either under those circumstances, mate. I'd be just bloody happy to be alive.
I was thinking, Don, that, you know, where we are now in 2019, I think the possibility of us having been at this place as far as the good things And I think it would be far beyond, because we wouldn't have had a Civil War. We wouldn't have had a World War One. We wouldn't have had a World War Two. We wouldn't have had a Korean conflict. We wouldn't have had a Rwanda massacre. We can't go through all of these. I really am convinced these things would never have happened if Paul's gospel had been picked up. And yes, folks, that's why we're doing this, because there's a world that's yet to be experienced. But I was sitting there thinking, I thought, you know what? If Paul's gospel would have been able to catch on, what we are experiencing now in innovation and technology and the thinking that we are doing that is putting us in progression forward, I think we would have covered it in the first 500 years after the cross.
And why not? Why not? That's a long time.
That's a long time. And when you go back and look at history, for all the things that were terminated, killed, suffocated, eradicated.
But just one, Michael Servetus is called the father of the pulmonary system. He was the guy that discovered the pulmonary system in the human body. He was burnt at the stake by John Calvin. He's the one I was referencing earlier. Yeah, they used green wood just so it'd hurt more. And they burned all of his books. That set medicine back, well, there's really no saying. Some people say 100 years. I'd be inclined to think a bit longer. But, I mean, and how many Michael Servetuses were killed in the name of Jesus?
Yeah.
Damn. Yeah, I don't know who was smarter, Copernicus or Servetus. I think Copernicus was smarter. He just shut up and said, oh, whatever.
Let's take in two more verses, and I think that's going to be a good place to shut down with a whole lot of promise of finding a whole lot more. I think we've got to let folks digest this. I've got to digest it. I mean, this is amazing. Let's close out with the next two verses with great promise of learning a lot when we come back.
Oh, right. Is this verse 12?
This is verse 12.
For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword, piercing even to the dividing asunder of soul and spirit and of the joints and marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and intents of the heart.
So if you think you're going to fool God that you've got faith, forget it. That's what he's saying.
I was just about to ask you what that meant.
Contextually, he's saying, don't try to fool God that you've got faith. Don't try to fool God that you have belief. It ain't gonna work.
Neither is there any creature that is not uncovered in his sight, but all things are naked and opened unto the eyes of him with whom we have to do.
Once again, don't try to fool God with your religion. Don't try to fool God with your Buddhism, with your Christianity, with Islam. Don't try to fool God. That's why I say to be a good Christian, you got to be a good liar, because they're first trying to fool God. And if you're going to fool God, you better start at least trying to fool people. Neither works, folks. And you're not even fooling yourself. You know you don't have what it takes. You know you've not done what needs to be done. You know you have fallen short.
Did you just stop yourself saying, you know you don't got? Is that what you just stopped?
I know. I like that. No.
Oh, that's,
I like you don't got.
You don't got nothing. Yeah.
Yeah, you don't got it.
Oh, boy. All right.
Well, we hope there's some good news somewhere. So far, the writer of Hebrews has led us through what the nation of Israel failed
at. And remember, this is just the introduction to the book.
Yes. The writer of Hebrews has also let us know that for this to work, only one has to enter in. The writer of Hebrews has assured us, just in case you think that's you, God's word is sharper than a two-edged sword. It looks right straight through the joints and the marrow, and is a discerner of the thoughts and the intents of the heart. And neither is there any creature that is not manifest in his sight, but all things are naked. What does the word naked mean, Dom? Oh. Means nude. So that means naked, doesn't it? No cover-ups. Yeah. No cover-ups. And they are opened.
Manifest?
Yeah. Boy, and this is to seize by the throat, to expose the gullet of a victim for killing. To lay bare.
Yeah, we had the people up to that point. They were listening. They were listening to us.
Folks, that's just how close of an examination your faith would go through.
Well, that's...
Are you really going to lie to God and tell him that you do believe?
No, it's just the people around the great white throne judgment I'm going to lie to. You know, when I'll be standing there with my all together in the all together, and I'll be lying to them, but I suppose I won't lie to God. I don't know. Maybe I'll get away with lying to God. I got away with lying to God in Christianity.
Oh, well, here we are, folks. I tell you what, this book of Hebrews is not yielding what I suspected. And, it's making me look very much forward to Calgary. I don't know.
Tell us about Calgary.
Well, we're going to have to go topical because I can't do this verse by verse in 4 or 5 sessions, folks. That's not possible.
Well, you tried with Romans, and man, I am amazed that you made it through that.
We did, and it was successful, but it was something I swore off of at the time also. But we are going to do these things topically. We're going to we'll go through an entire session on today and figure out what today is. We'll go through the entire session on comparing Jesus to angels, comparing Moses to Jesus. And so we're going to go through this topically in Hebrews because these things have opened up to us in a powerful way that we've really never had the opportunity to see this clearly.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
Did we have a good pledge drive?
We did have, yes. We were successful. We had folks that sent in checks that have never done it before, or at least have never done what they did before.
Did they know who they were giving it to?
They did indeed, and they knew what we were going to do with it, too.
Well, all right.
And to be quite honest with you, I think that many of them were inspired by this research and study that you and I have done on the book of Hebrews. It's just blowing people away, Don. This is so powerful.
Well, family, from Michael and myself, absolute and sincere thanks. We've had a recent change up in some of our staffing arrangements, and we have got some changes in how we're presenting things, and your donations are what makes this ministry being the gospel, which is the only thing we really care about. So we must leave you, family and friends. If you would like to know anything about the gospel revolution, then call our office with a huge donation and we'll tell you whatever you want to know. But the number you'd call is...
832-318-9339.
And speak to us about how you want to participate. Listen, when I say participate, there are many ways you can participate without involving money. And if there's anything that you would like to help us do because of your skill set or anything else or your desires, just go to www.gospelrevolution.com and link and just write us a letter. Or use that phone number that Michael just gave you, and you will get to talk to me. No, not me. Daniel. No, not Daniel. No, you'll get to talk to the boss. So now it's good night from myself, Don Bartle from the GR Studios right here in Gospel City, USA.
And it's good night from Michael Williams right here in the atomic capital of the world. We love you guys, and we hope that this study, this powerful understanding of the superior Greek that is used here, which has true implications. And thanks to Don, and thank you, Vic, for bringing us to this point where that we can open our minds as to what's actually taking place here. That does help you read through something if you kind of open your mind as to what may possibly be actually transpiring here as far as the writers and the styles and things that's going on and the Greek that's being used. So this has been, I would have lived these 67 years. You see, I changed my birthday in January. I'll be 67 in August, but I go ahead and start saying I'm 67
now. No, don't you be doing that, man. I am your senior. I'm your elder. You just respect me. I'm 67. You're just a whippersnapper of 66.
So we really are learning so much here. We love you. We do our best to do our best. Compared to the majesty of this gospel, we still fail. This ministry is staffed by people of so many different opinions and views of the world, of politics, of morality. You just would not believe how different we all are. But what brings us together is our sincere desire to promote the gospel. In that process, we take away and lay aside our freedom to pronounce and to declare openly many things that we hold dear to outside of the subject of the gospel. Because we know that people who disagree and agree with us on many other points all need the gospel. And so we want to let you know that we will never do this perfectly, but we hope to present a gospel to you that is as perfect as Christ himself has left it here with us to present.
Except for Victor Brennan. Ingratiating little groveler.
He's always causing trouble.
Oh, he's a groveler. We hope that you enjoyed today's PowerCast, and remember, we'll be here to do the same thing all over again next week. Only, well,
better. Better.
Love it. And that is another one in the can.
Gospel Revolution.